Welcome to Wake the Bear Radio with your host, Brandon Johnson, Chris Hurst, and Ron Powers.
All right. On the backside of Mother's Day, we had a great week ahead, but we had a great week of news piled up in the last week. And so tonight's going to be an awesome night.
Yes, tonight's show, the wheels of justice grind slow, but exceedingly fine.
That's right, they do. And because of that, that's going to be awesome. Going to be awesome. So tonight, yes, we have a special guest. It happens to be my daughter as well, but she is a DC lawyer, and she's in the heart of a lot of things happening there. And so she's been a beacon for free speech. She worked for the Fire a while back, where they did free speech on college campuses, and it was right, left, or center. It was just the free speech and the constitutionally protected right that we have. And so she's done that. Now she is working with Election Integrity. So we look forward to hearing some of the things. I know that she had put out a couple articles just last week in the Federalist. It was nice to read those. We'll get into that. But first, we just want to warm up and open up with a welcome and go over some of the housekeeping things.
Yeah, so we're glad you're here tonight. Wake the Bear Radio. We've been going on now. I think this is what, show number 138. So, wow, we've been doing this for a couple of years now. Wake the Bear was birthed out of KSCO Radio in Santa Cruz. It was birthed out of a lot of prayer and consternation. We saw this nation go in the wrong direction, and we saw California continuing to go in the wrong direction. And we thought, okay, the bear needs to wake up. And the bear is California, of course, on our flag, on the California state flag. And she is waking up. And so we have all of our shows, all 138 shows, up on wakethebearradio.com, wakethebearradio.com. And we'd love to hear from you. If you have questions for us, if you've something you liked what we talked about, or you disagree to what we said, you know, we're all about feedback. We're all learning. We're all journeying together. We really felt like a need for the body of Christ to actually have people that are analyzing daily events, news events from a Christian perspective. And we really felt like, you know, the initial name of the show was going to be called, Question the Narrative. And but we felt like Wake the Bear was a little better. But really, that's the focus, is that we are realizing that the mainstream media has been controlled by the six mega corporations. A lot of the information is not getting out, but it is now. And we are seeing a movement happen right now. We are seeing patriots becoming Christians, Christians becoming patriots. We're seeing the church wake up, and we're seeing just average Americans, the average Californians, saying, hey, something doesn't smell right in the kitchen. And we think perhaps there's more going on to this story than they're telling us, if they even tell us the story at all, right? Because a lot of these stories are not even being told, as you can see by one of our friends, Vigilant Fox, who shares the top 10 news stories that are not being shared this week, or that the mainstream media is not telling you. So we cover those. We cover Enoch News. We got a lot of different sources that we cover, but a lot of the stuff we cover is people asking questions and saying, hey, this doesn't fit. And what could be going on here? And not just believing, not being just shoved into a narrative and believing whatever the mainstream media tells us. And so that's really the focus of Wake the Bear. If you want to contact us, please do. You can reach us at Brandon@wakethebearradio.com or Chris@wakethebearradio.com, K-R-I-S. And Ron, wakethebearradio.com. Email us, ask us your questions, share what you thought, give us some feedback. That's what it's all about. And welcome. And I also wanted to, as we're welcoming tonight, I wanted to point out a couple things. We want to say thank you to all the mothers out there. We would not be who we are without you. And we do not call you birther persons. We call you mothers. And we're not giving into that garbage. We are so thankful for the moms that raised us. I always share with my mom that I think she's a Proverbs 31 woman. Her children rise and call her blessed. And so, and my wife as well, I told her the same. And so her husband calls her blessed as well. But one thing that was cool is that my daughter, this is my wife's 18th year of being a mother, because my daughter is turning 18 this month, next week, actually. And she had a goal to publish her very first novel before she was 18, and she actually did it. She published her book on the eve of mourning, and it's now available on Barnes & Noble, and it's available at Amazon. So here it is on the Amazon. And that cover, yes, awesome. Hallelujah. Good job, Cassie. Her name is, she goes by Cassandra Grace, and that's kind of her artist name. But this is the, she designed the cover, but she had Dad make it. So that's kind of cool.
Oh, that is fabulous. Great. So Brandon, yeah. You did that. That is
an honor. Yeah, that's awesome.
Yeah. And the interesting thing is we've been doing this since she was a kid. She'd come to me and she would like write a story in like broken English. She'd say, Dad, draw the picture for this. Or we'll say, here's the pictures, make you put the words on it. And so we've been making books for the last 18 years, but this is the first one that's actually published. So I'm very proud Papa to do this. So kind of all about the daughters tonight, Ron, right? Cause you're a,
yeah.
Yeah.
And, you know, I'm going to use that as a lead in that, you know, painting a picture, Annalise Powers will be painting a picture for us of some of the research she's done and some of the articles in the Federalist that she's done lately and kind of get us up to speed on some of the things that are happening with election integrity. You know, since she was even a small child, she has always had this passion for what's right and what's wrong. Rules. I saw that her growing up, this is like that she was made for this sort of thing.
Justice.
She wants justice, always did, even as a child. And so as she's a full grown adult now, it still is in her veins just as much now as it was back then. And probably a lot more. So with no more further ado, I'm going to have Annalise Powers on with us. Mm-hmm. Welcome, Annalise.
Hello. Thanks for having me.
Yeah. And you are 3 hours ahead of us. So you are in the DC area. And so we'll respect your time. But thank you so much for coming on.
Hey, I have a question to start right out with before we get into your material. Is Washington, D.C. as big a swamp as it's said to be? Were you surprised by anything? Are there any gators walking around the streets or what's going on out there?
It's hard to say. I think being involved in a good church, you have enough. You can choose to put blinders on and see the very best. There are some of the best and the brightest in D.C., I think. So I've had great experiences and have been surprised by how, I don't know, warm and centered a lot of people are. But there certainly are surprises in D.C. Here and there. It's hard to say exactly what, but politics happens and you see it around you. But I've been surrounded by some great people.
Wow.
Well, as a dad, that's good to hear.
Yeah.
There's definitely crime though. So, I mean, there are some things that are happening here.
keep your head on a swivel.
Yeah.
Keep in prayer. Have a good body of Christ around you. That's good.
Exactly.
Wow. Sounds like some good wisdom. So one of the things we wanted to jump right into was the Georgia elections. You know, the whole election integrity has been first and foremost in a lot of news, or at least truth or news, you know, as these investigations have been in the courtroom. And I know for the last 2 weeks, I've seen quite a bit of it more. And so if you want, we could just go right into it, or I can show a clip just to give some people an idea what we're talking about.
Yeah, let's show the clip and let's get a background on that.
Okay, that sounds good. I will show the clip. So here we go. I'm going to play this one here.
Facts tell the story that a county's negligent conduct of an election and reveals the reality of how difficult it is to have one's grievances addressed in a timely manner, if at all. But this complaint, especially coupled with the full hand count audit complaint by the same complainants, suggests election conduct that is unacceptable. And the state election board should address each complaint and then consider the appropriate action. First, the problem with election day count and the failure to properly secure, protect, and document the safety and authenticity of the votes from 10 advanced voting locations is appalling. Record keeping is abysmal. proper documentation to ensure the public that votes or ballot boxes have not been tampered with is shamefully poor. The opportunity to electronically stuff the ballot box was obviously available, and that has left a film of doubt and suspicion over Fulton County that may be impossible to wipe away unless something is done to ensure that it's not, there's not a repeat of multiple violations. Second, as far as the complaint of the recount, someone should be held accountable for the adding votes electronically or failing or refusing to produce ballot images for the complainants and maybe even the court, or for double scanning of ballots. Dominion claims its machines do not allow double scanning of thousands of votes. The question remains, how did that happen? Did Dominion lie to the state of Georgia? Double scanning and double counting of votes is fraud. It may be unintentional or just negligence, but nevertheless, it's vote fraud. The FBI states that voting twice is a violation of law. Then officially counting votes twice is also a violation. It's a federal.
Now we'll stop there, but that gives us an idea of what it sounds like is going on there. So, yeah, Annalise, what do you make of that?
There's a lot going on there. There's been a complaint that was filed by Kevin Monclaw, and that's the complaint that they're trying to address mostly here in the state election board. And so lots of the grassroots have gathered and have been anxiously awaiting this report to be addressed. I would say it's hard to say exactly what's going on because, and that's kind of the problem, is that you want to have transparency in your elections. There are images, ballot images that are supposed to be retained. And so if you go on further in the clip, one of the attorneys for the Secretary of State comes and does explain that although there aren't ballot images, there are the actual physical ballots. And so this is one of those issues that I'm in the middle of researching right now, is trying to figure out kind of the discrepancy between what the attorney is saying and what the complaint is saying. And there definitely are unanswered questions that have kind of been dodged. I know that Member Johnson has also asked for certain materials that she wasn't given. She was said that she asked for the Shaw files. So whenever you're having those ballots scanned, it should be automatic. From what I've been told by election officials, it should be automatic that a ballot image is captured and that Shaw file is captured. And so you would have to actually, from what I'm told, you would have to actually take an extra step to remove the ballot images from the record of the actual vote and the recording of the vote. And so that's really suspicious for a lot of people, because why would someone be intentionally removing, that's what it seems to suggest, is that it's an intentional action to separate the record keeping. And so there's kind of a disconnect between the dialogue between what the member is asking for and what the attorney is giving her. So they're saying that this is all addressed, and if you go to the Fulton County on the county level instead of the state level, they'll say, oh, everything was kind of was covered in the meeting and there's no more questions. But obviously there is still a question about what the record keeping is supposed to be and some of that, but there's probably much more that needs to be investigated that I haven't really fully dug into yet.
Okay.
You and your boss, Josh Finley, you guys actually put together an article discussing some of this, right, on the Democrats mm-hmm. and the media allies pressuring Georgia yeah. election officials to blindly certify elections. So yeah. Would you say that the pressure that came then was they pressured to hurry up and certify before they actually looked at the discrepancies?
Yeah, actually, the problem is, especially in these last couple elections, they are saying that it's a ministerial task, meaning that it's kind of more ceremonial. So even though the Georgia statute tells them, the election officials, that they are supposed to compare, for example, the number of ballots that have been cast to the number of people that have been recorded as voting, they're supposed to compare those numbers at a precinct level and make sure that they match up. And that's actually required in the law. And they are supposed to Also, if those don't match up, they're supposed to investigate it and stop recording all of the votes before they continue reporting them. Basically, what they're trying to say is that, well, this is kind of coming from the left. They're saying that, you know, it's just automatic. Like when it's time to certify, you have to certify. It doesn't matter if anyone sent you or gave you that information. It doesn't matter if you were checking those numbers. And so obviously that's kind of a bit of a problem. Mm-hmm. And that's also what was addressed later on in the state election board meeting, is trying to get a rule proposal that clarifies that this is supposed to be a process that's part of order. Because the election officials actually got letters that were threatening them with like criminal prosecution, basically, for potentially not certifying in future elections. So the Democrat Party of Georgia actually sent letters to people that had refused to certify in past elections and said, you know, you need to be aware that this is a ministerial task and that you just need to certify. Otherwise, you're violating the law. But it's a complete misreading of the law.
Wow.
Yeah, no, that's a little... big problem. It's a really big problem, because if you think about it, this is also really a national push too. There's articles from the Brennan Center that's very left-leaning. There's a Stanford Law Review article that's going around saying that there's, you know, no discretion for election officials about whether or not they should certify. And so this kind of seems to be a trend that's going on, not just in Georgia, but nationwide. And that would remove a whole barrier of protection for, you know, election security and making sure that the process is happening as it's supposed to. It kind of also makes it sound like the election officials, you know, are kind of just purposeless figureheads instead of people that are educated on the election process, which from my experience, the election officials that I've had the pleasure of working with are very knowledgeable about the election process, and they're in the position that they're in for a reason and should be able to do that job. So, number of problems with that issue, I think.
So I have a question about the what you were reporting on. Is this an informational gathering type of platform that they're using, or are they trying to reverse some things, change some things? Who is pushing to have the further investigation done?
Let's see. The further investigation, as far as who wants to investigate before certifying the election?
No, I was the information that you wrote the article on is exposing.
Okay, gotcha. Like
so is that an information?
Yeah, yeah.
They're just trying to figure out, hey, what happened in 2020, and should we be changing things, or are they actually looking to reverse some election results?
Gotcha. Yes, yes. I totally get what you're saying now. This, I think, is more going forward. So a lot of the work that my organization has done is taking kind of the lessons from the past election and saying, you know, we want to make sure that there's clarity and transparency moving forward, because I think election integrity exists on a very big spectrum. And so there are people that at the very least that are election integrity advocates can acknowledge that there are some blind spots, that there are some issues, that the process is not running smoothly. And then you have other people that are, very concerned with 2020, what happened, and would love to see that election overturned. So there's a very broad spectrum of people. And I think that my organization really takes kind of a middle road of trying to grab everyone together and push the ball forward as far as focusing on election process issues. So the nice thing about that is that we can work in counties that are kind of more purpley. They're not fully, they're not red. They're not Republicans necessarily, but they're not so far to the left that they're unwilling to bring real changes to the election process that are so necessary. And those tend to also be key counties in elections. Those are the ones that swing or determine the outcome. And so this job and this particular reporting is more focusing on, here's what the process is that we have in line. Here's how it's been challenged in the past. This is the direction the left is trying to push with the upcoming election. They're trying to just plow through certification. And we want to keep those barriers and those processes that that come and bring integrity to the election process. We want to make sure that those are still in place and are safe and protected. So I would say it's partly, you know, research on what has happened in the past, but also looking forward to wanting to strengthen those protections ahead of time. Because once the election happens, if there's any kind of issue, it's so much harder to bring those issues up in hindsight than, you know, you want to do it before. You want to start preparing ahead of time, not on the back end when things have already fallen apart and you're trying to scramble to figure out what happened. So yeah, I don't know if that answers the question.
Yeah, that does. I mean, you know, I think the philosophy out there is, listen, we didn't, there were errors and we didn't get it right. So yeah, we want those errors to be dealt with to their full extent of the law, so that the next time there is a barrier there, so the people who are doing their job will take it seriously and recognize there's actually consequences, not only consequences to the voters' perception of, you know, integrity in our votes, but there's actually legal barriers to people who are committing fraud, whether 100%. They do it intentionally or unintentionally, you holding a very high stake.
So yes,
I see the philosophy of both. Well, some people just say, oh, let's just get on to the next election. But other people say, well, if we don't fix the last one, we can't really get on to the next one because we didn't actually give the proper consequences to the last one that will keep it from happening in the future.
Yeah. Yeah. So it is. Yeah, it is a lot of looking back to see what happened. It is. It's a little bit of both.
Now you got you did two articles here. One of them is actually on voter confidence in the age of glitchy machines. That one seems to have a focus on the fact that people are increasingly less confident that their votes are being counted correctly if they're done digitally. Well, what's the debate there? What are both sides saying in this for this situation?
Yeah, good question. I think that this one, it's again one of those things we're trying to take the ball and move it forward in whatever way we can. As far as looking at this next election coming up, I work with some grassroots groups that are doing amazing things and really looking for ways to, I don't know, just bring confidence to the election in a way that's possible, in ways that they can work with election officials. And so, you know, we're probably 6 months out from, you know, another election. And so the reality of getting rid of machines altogether and going to 100% hand counts is just not very realistic for most counties. But there are still a number of other things that can be done that kind of helps to ensure confidence. And so this article touches on ways that I've seen groups really actually succeed in doing. Some ways that are already prescribed in law, but, you know, it would be great to have grassroots groups go and observe and make sure that those processes are actually happening, because just because they're in the law doesn't necessarily mean that they're being enforced or observed. So I talked about, you know, you want to do a partial recount of the vote after the fact. And so that's one way to kind of counteract that machine skepticism is, you know, you might not be able to do the full hand recount, but at least you can take a portion. That usually means choosing a couple precincts in a county and recounting all of those ballots. And that can be done by hand. And you want to make sure that in that precinct, which should be chosen at random, that the votes match up with basically what the machines are reporting and how that recount happens. But in that case, you don't necessarily have to have everyone recount all of the ballots from the entire county, which is nice because it's easier to convince an election official that that's a realistic way to like move the ball. And there are also a lot of counties that already do that. So it's good to just check in and make sure that's happening. And it's a good way to go.
Yeah, I see it being an engineer with data, random pick is really important. That way it's an honest one. It's not like, oh, we got our special section that we'll do a recount on. You know, it's it could be anywhere. And so it keeps the whole place hopefully honest.
Definitely. And I think too, there's also LNA testing, which is supposed to be logic and accuracy testing, which almost every state requires LNA testing of their machines before the election, and most of them require it to be public so that people can go and view the testing taking place. But almost no one ever shows up. And so I was working with some groups in Pennsylvania, and they said that they went to LNA testing, and the election officials were absolutely shocked that anyone showed up. So it is one of those things where you just kind of assume, oh, someone's going to watch, but not always the case.
Is that something that should be stressed going forward for 2024, having people there? I mean, is that something you would put out a plea for?
I think so. I think that it's not necessarily the most satisfactory thing just to see LNA testing beforehand, but it is a step. It is something that I don't know if it's always being done in the way that like the Election Assistance Commission has guidelines for how LNA testing should happen. And it's hard to say that there's going to be a really thorough, I don't know, use of those guidelines. And so, I would definitely stress it. I would say it's nice to have that and maybe one other thing to kind of check, but you do what you can, I think.
Yeah, I think that even in Arizona, they did the LNA testing, but there was evidence that there was some altering of the software after the initial testing. So I know that wouldn't totally get people. If there's a way to cheat and people want to cheat, they'll cheat. And it's an interesting idea because we want security in our elections right now. I think we feel how important it is that we have confidence and that we know that our votes are actually our votes and that the people have actually elected the ones that are said to have won. And if you're not sure, anytime there's a machine, you know that there's the opportunity for a wireless system. They can say, oh, we're not connected to the internet, but those are embedded in these machines. I mean, they know that there is a wireless part to it. So I'm not completely confident that even with the LNA testing, even with a partial hand count, I think that the public is at that place of high suspectability, you know, that they're not sure that their election systems can be trusted. And the truth is, if there's evil behind it, so that's really, you know, is it an accident or are people actually doing something that's evil? So that has a lot, how you answer that question has to do with, you know, was it just not doing something above board because there's carelessness or there was just human error? Or is there a system in place that someone is actually trying to pervert the count so that their guys can win because there's an agenda to destroy America? And that's kind of where people are right now, because the answer to that question has a lot to do with what people would trust as their check and balance system.
Yeah, I think it depends too on the way that you go about it. So even saying like maybe there is someone that wants to purposely cause an issue with the election, I think there's also the idea that where there's opportunity, that's the area where you target. And so I think in the areas that even, you know, there are, it would be ideal perhaps if the machine is the number one concern, then there still are certain people there are a lot of people that would love to have like 100% hand count. And I think that on smaller counties, it's doable perhaps. On larger counties, I've heard from people that have done the hand counts, even in those small counties, that are very in favor of that. But they have said that they did not think that it was going to work on a larger county. So it's one of those things where in the long run, I'd love to see, you know, the most secure way possible. But in the short term, as far as 6 months, I think trying to just squeeze out the opportunity where there's just obvious, obvious opportunity to not check the machines and things like that is probably the best way to go on the practical for like grassroots and that sort of thing. And I think it's worthwhile. But yeah, absolutely. It's definitely hard to secure the elections when you have these big questions hanging over your head, for sure.
Well, it's interesting to us. I mean, to me, and I look at it, you know, the Republicans have had 3.5 years to fix it. Yeah, we're down to 6 months, but where, I mean, the reality that they actually broke laws, they broke their own laws to actually push through the voting the way they did. And many states did that, and multiple laws. And we haven't figured out how to fix that yet. And, you know, my view is that we should, one, you should have an ID when you come in. It should be in person. It should be a piece of paper, and there should be Democrats and Republicans standing around there all watching you. And so there's no, and why don't we do what they did in Iraq when we weren't sure about elections for them? They made them dip their finger in ink so that no one could ever vote twice. If you had your ink finger covered in ink, green ink, you couldn't go in and vote twice. So it's like make it completely impossible for anybody to possibly, you know.
Vote. Yeah, that's the hard part of the lawfare too, is I think that there were a lot of lawsuits that came up about those sudden changes that were totally, you know, in our view, unlawful because they didn't follow the legislative, you know, procedures and all of that and these emergency COVID regulations. Mm-hmm. But those are hard to stop. Those are definitely hard to stop, even though there are a lot of great groups that want to stop them.
Wow. Did you hear anything, any scuttlebutt about the Fulton County broken pipes during the election, where the stopping of the counting when Trump was very far ahead and there were broken pipes, so they shut everything down. And yet there's that filming. It might not be in your scope of understanding, but there was filming. There was footage of people that returning to the room and scanning from those boxes that were under the tables. That was that infamous Fulton County, I believe, that there's so much question about the honesty, integrity of that place. And then they found out, no, it was just like a toilet overflowed, but it shut everything down. So even the story was very strange. Do you know anything about that?
I do remember when it came up and all of that. Definitely very interesting, especially the timing, I would say. But yeah, it's a little outside the scope of what our TPPF is focused on, because we're more focused on the process issues now. I do think I think the timing of, maybe on a personal level, the timing of the leak is very suspicious, very odd, the pipe burst. But I know they do. The Georgia State Election Board and a lot of the Secretary of State's offices dealt with the suitcases underneath the tables and stuff a little bit more. So I feel like those questions, I think, are, even though it looks odd, I would say it's probably not on the top of my concern, just since they have addressed some of those ones a little bit more. But yeah, there's things that are odd. But yeah, I think for us mostly it's looking at, what are the processes that make things run as smoothly as possible? Are there ballot shortages? Because that can, you know, disenfranchise voters. Republicans are more likely to vote on election day than, you know, Democrats. And so you want to have, you know, when all the in-person voting gets a little bit tricky, that can be an issue. Making sure that the machines are working, that the recounts are happening, those types of things that we tend to focus on right now.
If you could model a system, how would you do it as an attorney and as someone who's now been looking at this? And you probably went, oh my goodness, that has an embedded problem right there. What would you do?
What processes would I use?
Uh-huh.
Well, I think that I would definitely take out the drop boxes if possible. Right now they're a part of Georgia law, but in Pennsylvania, they do a pretty good job of having security around them. So they're constantly monitored. There are people that are paid to sit right by the drop boxes. So things like that, if it's not possible to get rid of drop boxes, there's definitely ways to secure them more. Thankfully, we've seen a lot less of the 24-hour unsupervised drop boxes. I think that was crazy. That was definitely a big COVID thing. I'd say, you know, there's one county, Bucks County in Pennsylvania, that really has started to serve as kind of a model for moving in the direction of election security. And that's a more purple, like key election county. So the fact that they've kind of tightened things up a bit is really encouraging. It makes you feel like it's possible to tighten up the elections in other key counties where not everyone is necessarily in your favor or wants to cooperate with election integrity, which I don't understand in the first place. Why not secure the election? Why not secure? Especially when you're working with other, you know, fellow grassroots people. But anyhow, I would say same thing with the central count locations, having those monitored very clearly, giving poll watchers the ability to actually walk up to the election workers and see kind of the numbers that are being inscribed. There are other counties that have poll watchers, but they are put in basically like a bullpen where they cannot see anything, which kind of defeats the purpose of having poll watchers. And so things like that poll observation, live streaming of the counting, I think really helps secure drop boxes if you're going to have drop boxes. I'd say same thing with, you know, having ID. I know a big thing with the registration is that the federal form doesn't require proof of citizenship. And so that kind of shackles states from being able to secure their registration list as much as possible. And so with the SAVE Act that has been recently introduced, that would help push to unshackle the states and be able to ask for more citizen verification documents when they're registering. So there are a number of things that I think would be better. Georgia just passed some good laws that are really good about saying where homeless should be registered to vote. So you can't just take advantage of like homelessness and have people registering all over the place, getting rid of the QR codes on the ballot. So even if you can't necessarily get rid of the machines, the idea that you're scanning QR codes that you can't verify as a voter, a lot of people don't like that because that's, you know, you can't verify that your vote came out when you, you know, voted, that it's accurate. So having readable text to scan, things like that, I think would be huge improvements that limit how much you can, you know, take advantage of the system.
Wow. Wow. You've thought it through.
I've thought a few things. You guys have got great. You guys have been thinking through a lot of things, too. I can tell. So it's great. It's great because it's grassroots. Really, all of this is really grassroots stuff. Like a lot of the laws have been changed in by grassroots. So everything that you guys are researching and doing and sharing, I think, is a big contribution to that.
Well, awesome. That was great. It would be nice if everybody just went with a system like you've thought out there with securing a drop box if they have to have them at all, you know, and then just, just recounting, having that already set in motion, not as a reaction, but as a pro, you know, doing it in advance, being ready for it. So good stuff.
Yeah, I have one more question. What is your next project? What do you have to write on?
I don't know. And I don't know if I could say if I can. I would share if I could. I don't know. I'm still looking into Georgia, still looking at kind of what's happening there. And I'll continue to push for kind of that certification issue is a big one on my radar, just because there's such a big push against, you know, to make it ministerial task. That will probably be somewhat related. I'd say also something that a lot of grassroots are working on in Georgia is cleaning the voter rolls and making sure that those, you know, that there's not all these ballots for people that don't live in the state kind of floating around. Want to make sure that you know, you have the accountability of, you know, this ballot is going to someone that lives in Georgia, that's registered, that's, you know, supposed to vote, that sort of thing.
Yeah, we had somebody come in and talk to our group, the California Republic Assembly, about, I think it was from ICSE, and they talked about ghost, you know, having voter rolls that are dirty, how they would use them as they would actually use ghost voting. They would, because they have all these ballots that go out, and then they secure the vote, the amount after they've already gone out. And then what's happening is more votes have come in than actual people that were registered to vote, right? So it makes you go, wait a second, how is that possible? You know, which of course
yeah
it's a skepticism about it. So I still think we should do this right here.
I go. Like it. You know what? If it were up to me, I'd be taking notes. I wish it was.
Yeah, that would be great. Better than having a little "I voted" sticker that you can peel off and
definitely.
So, awesome.
Okay. One way to Jesus, one way to God too.
That's really great.
You'd wear it as a badge of pride. Hey, look, yeah. I voted today. You know,
and exactly.
That'd be awesome. Well, Annalise, we appreciate having you on. It was a joy to have you on and learn a little bit about what's going on, and especially with this Georgia case. And keep up the good work. If there's any closing statements, we'll do them now. Otherwise, we'll continue on with our show. And it was great to have Annalise on as a guest.
Sounds great. Thank you guys so much for having me. Love what you're doing.
Yeah. Okay.
God bless you, Annalise.
God bless you.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
All right.
That was awesome.
That was nice.
She's amazing.
Yeah, very proud. Definitely a proud dad moment as well. But
you and Susie did an amazing job. She's just amazing person.
Well, I'd say my wife probably did 95% of it. You know,
isn't that how it is?
You know? That is so. Well, awesome. Yeah. Well, let's go on to our other topics for tonight. We have quite a few things that have been happening.
Let's jump into the Trump rally, the biggest rally in New Jersey's history. Oh, the biggest event that New Jersey has ever had was 80. Some numbers were saying 100,000 people in Wildwood. I like that word, Wildwood. It was wild. I can see. I hear Trump saying it's wild.
I think I love you. Yeah, it's definitely a big, big group of people, as you can see in this picture here. And you know, in a blue state, I mean, think about the psychological damage that President Trump is doing to left leaners right now. I mean, but yet, I'll let you speak on it, Chris, because you spoke on it earlier. Just his Trump's demeanor has changed now, and I think it's very strategic. But man, to be in a blue state and to have the largest political rally in its history, that's a big statement.
Yeah, he, you know, one of the things that I loved is that Trump was inviting people in from all parties. And he said, whether you're Republican, whether you're conservative, whether you're independent, or whether you're a registered Democrat, I invite you to stand with me to save our nation. Our nation is in a bad state. And you know how he gives clear language. So he really was rallying people, not around it's time to be a Republican, but it's time to save our nation. And then he was very clear about using some language about what was coming against America. And he had talked about that the deep state's coming against America, that the Marxists, fascists, the communists, the what he calls the political embedded political party, and the tyrants, the villains, and the fake news media. So he clumped all of those in kind of the dark side that's trying to take us over. And he stopped really talking about make America great again. And he started some language just, I think, in the last 3-4 weeks on it's time to save America. So it's not just let's just get back to our grassroots and be happy, but he really was using language that we have a common enemy, we need a common cause, and we need everyone to do this together because we're about to lose this nation. So his language had gone much more towards notice that this left, they aren't happy people. And he used that they're not happy. They're not happy people at all. And he contrasted that with the people that he was speaking to and who he's wanting to really gather around him to stay. You know, he uses that term, with you by my side. And that sounds almost like a partnership, a family, we're doing this like we're battling, like on a battlefield. And he called the people he was speaking to beautiful people, people that he loves. And he said, you are intelligent and you're courageous and you're sensible. You have common sense and you know how to love. You love this nation. And those words, you know, you just don't hear that out of Joe Biden's mouth. It's really remarkable language that people can unite around when they realize, you know, this isn't, if we don't do something and come together as a nation, we're going to lose our nation.
Yeah. Yeah. Wow. He really rallied people in a really good way that I think is really meaningful. I think some of the things that he was saying were just so endearing. Like you would, and it was very fatherly almost the way he was speaking. And very interesting though, there was even some comms in there. Did you see the shape of the stage? The shape of the stage looks like a bomber, like a B-2 bomber, you know,
the nose of the plane.
Yeah. People were commenting on this and some people said, that was likely a comm, you know. And if you look, you know, at if you actually look at a B-2 bomber, it looks just like it, you know.
Yeah,
that is hilarious. Well, he had they had more people. They weren't even sure if it was 80 or 100,000 people. They got there the night before. Many of them camped out, and it was very festive, as right there on that beautiful beach and in front of the Ferris wheel and the roller coaster. It just looked like a ton of fun. I wanted to be there.
Yeah, definitely.
There's that B-2 bomber.
Totally.
Yeah, I remember the comms.
Yeah, he kept saying, and I think it's really important that he's trying to help us understand. He kept saying that the enemy inside is far more dangerous than the enemy outside. And he went through some problems that he said he could quickly solve, like the war between Russia and Ukraine, which is a huge part of where our money and our instability is gone, and even our division and the concern about what that represents. But he was talking very clearly about that our problem is this enemy within.
Yeah. Yeah, he's very strategic right now. I definitely see that. You know, it's not, you know, make America great again. That sounds like a slogan, you know, just like Barack Obama had, you know, change and things like that.
Hope he changed.
We need to save this country. You know, there's like a consequence if you don't. It's like we need to get together. And the fact that he is reaching across the aisle, reaching to everybody, it shows just the importance of the hour. And hopefully it really opens the door for somebody that may be anti-Trump to say, you know what, I think I might take that step towards him. I think I see the handwriting on the wall. I am concerned. It's not just, oh, let's just be great and do it the Republican way. It's like, let's save this country. And I think they know deep down inside there's something wrong.
Yeah. Yeah. So. And there's this hopelessness that has been brewing, I think, since COVID, that hasn't been restored to our nation yet. And a great leader rallies people around him, and a great leader unifies. And one of the things, the attributes of Trump, I mean, he really is a great leader, and he is helping us to understand that everybody can be a part of saving this nation. He talks about the those that have not been seen. He says, your action by coming alongside and let's do this together, you're going to be seen. This is your fight. And suddenly he gave them an opportunity to be heroic. You know, he started comparing people of this nation like the patriots of old before, that didn't bend, they didn't break, they didn't yield, they didn't give up, they didn't back down. And then he started using language I found, which was very interesting. He started talking as though he'd already won. And he said, with your support, we will go on to victory, and we will see changes in this next year greater than we're seeing at the any time in history, even the revolution, the original revolution, and you all are not no longer going to be the silent majority. You're going to be seen. You are no longer forgotten men and women, and you are forgotten no more. So he was speaking like a statesman.
Mm. Yeah. Yeah, it definitely feels like a shift. I mean, there's a lot of shifts happening this week with things that are happening in the trials, things that are happening the way Trump is talking. You know, a lot of the revelations about the FBI and how them planting evidence. We'll talk about that in a minute, but it just feels like there's a shift. Like we're about to start really ramping up and seeing more and more of the greater levels of exposure. And you know, and Trump is going to have to be the rally or the, hey, let's do this together. When people are starting to see how sick things have gotten, how, you know, when people are discouraged, you're going to need someone to rally them around. The courage to move forward. And I see that shift happening for sure.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, definitely. And, you know, to contrast that great rally and the hope and all the things that President Trump is putting out there, you go to the opposite end and you had, you know, Biden with his interview with CNN. And even on CNN, they couldn't even go to bat for him, you know, which in the past they have. They've giving them, you know, what's your favorite flavor ice cream sort of question rather than what's going on in the economy. So yeah, a wreck of an interview. In fact, I had a short video clip. If you want, I could share
that. Yeah, play it.
Yeah, let's do it.
It's always fun to see CNN.
Yeah.
With us.
Do journalism, you mean? Actually do journalism?
Yeah.
Important issue for voters. It's also true right now, Mr. President, that voters by a wide margin trust Trump more on the economy. Oh, they say that in polls. Right. And part of the reason for that may be the numbers. And you're aware of many of these, of course. The cost of buying a home in the United States is double what it was when you look at your monthly costs from before the pandemic.
For those listening, I got to pause here and just tell you that it's not an Fox News, it's not Newsmax, it's actually Communist News Network airing a brutal 2-minute takedown of Joe Biden.
Real income, when you account for inflation, is actually down since you took office. Economic growth last week, far short of expectations. Consumer confidence, maybe no surprise, is near a 2-year low.
Interesting.
With less than 6 months to go to Election Day, are you worried that you're running out of time to turn that around?
We've already turned around. Look at the Michigan survey. For 65% of American people think they're in good shape economically. They think the nation's not in good shape, but they're personally in good shape. The polling data has been wrong all along. You know, how many you guys do a poll with CNN? How many folks you have to call to get one response? The idea that we're in a situation where things are so bad, the folks that, I mean, we've created more jobs. We're in a situation where people have access to good paying jobs. And the last I saw, the combination of the inflation, the cost of inflation, all those things, that's really worrisome to people with good reason. That's why I'm working very hard to bring the cost of rentals down, to increase the number of homes that are available. But let me say it this way. When I started this administration, people were saying there's going to be a collapse of the economy. We have the strongest economy in the world. Let me say it again, in the world.
Although GDP last week was far short of expectations.
Oh, it wasn't.
So, I mean, you know, he's not getting any favors from her. No. Definitely.
I mean, he's getting the Trump treatment.
Yeah, he is starting to. You know, the fact that they're even talking about real statistics and things like that, there's definitely a shift.
Well, the fact that they even let him have an interview, that's a shift. He looked a little strange.
Yeah, he did. Well, he was just kind of like,
those are real questions. Wait a second. I wasn't prepared to do real questions.
Yeah.
Well, he had his beady black eyes. I hate to point that out, but he did look like he was not a happy camper. He talked about that he'd created 15 million jobs since he was been president. But the truth is that was because COVID shut down, people went back to work. So he didn't create
anything.
He just went back to work. And then he talked about that Trump was the only president who lost more jobs than he created. And once again, that was a COVID thing that he didn't lose the jobs. The nation was shut down during his administration. And then he just made up some strange statistics, like Trump said he'd take away Medicare. And there has never been anything that Trump said about taking any sort of jeopardizing Medicare or Social Security. He actually said that he would never do anything make that unstable, that he wasn't going to touch it. And that then Biden said that 1,000 billionaires are paying less than 8.3% federal tax. And that's just not true either. There was a number that was done after this interview that showed that the average millionaire and above that makes $4.4 million is actually paying higher than 25% income tax and payroll tax. So some of the numbers that he was moving around didn't jive, but and he denied some things like that the economy, he said, the inflation when he came in was at 9.25, and that the truth was that it was at 1.4% January 2021 when he came in. So they're just numbers that I don't know if he makes them up or they just manipulate the numbers, but there were some lies that got called out.
Yeah. I think what were there, 15 lies in 17 minutes?
Yep.
Yeah. Something like that.
17 minutes.
Yeah. And that article's on the New York Post. You know, they're the conservative New York paper. They're not New York Times, but the New York Post. So you can find that full article on that.
Oh, good stuff. Good stuff. Anything else going on? Let's see. What do we have?
Oh, gosh. Tons going on.
Speaking of other people running, President Trump also gave a big warning about JFK Jr. And I thought that was really interesting. Let me play a clip better that comes from the horse's mouth on this one. I was never considering to vote for him ever, but at the same time, I thought, man, he'd be a good VP or something like that, you know, pull the party. But after hearing President Trump talk about just how different he is, I realized, wow, I fell for maybe the fake news. So yeah, let me just play that real quick and let you make your own minds on this.
RFK Jr. is a Democrat plant, a radical left liberal who's been put in place in order to help crooked Joe Biden, the worst president in the history of the United States, get reelected. A lot of people think that Jr. is a conservative. He's not. He's more liberal than anybody running on the Democrat side. A vote for Jr. would essentially be a wasted protest vote that could swing either way, but would only swing against the Democrats if Republicans knew the true story about him. Jr. is totally anti-gun and extreme environmentalist who makes the Green New scammers look very conservative by comparison. A big time taxer, he wants to tax you. An open border advocate, he wants those borders to be wide open for more people to come in from prisons and mental institutions. And he's anti-military and he's anti-vet. He's an extreme liberal. He's radical left and radicalized. Also are his family. They'll never allow him to be a Republican. They've said that we will not let him be a Republican. And his chief funder is the VP candidate that nobody ever heard of, except her ex-husband, who's been stripped of a big chunk of his cash. And he knows exactly what she's all about. She's even more liberal than RFK Jr.
So a dire warning that, if you're considering voting for him, you think you want something in the middle, you know. So see, with the anti-vax, President Trump goes on to say he actually said he'd support vaccines, I think, in general. I don't think the COVID one, but, you know, it's just a good warning. And I'm glad it came at this time. So those that are out there trying to play middle of the road, it's one side of the fence or the other. And usually the devil owns the fence. So,
and he's addressing very real issues, isn't he, President Trump? He's bringing up the questions that are in people's minds. You know, we can feel the fact that CNN was not supporting Biden. We can feel something's about to shift in the Democrat Party. So perhaps there's a newcomer coming in. We know, though, that Junior, as he calls him, is running on a different party platform. I did hear him recently interviewed where abortion was brought into it. And he said, you know, the states and the federal government have no place to decide the abortion issue. It should be on the place on the woman alone. Why don't you play that? Because when you hear it out of his own mouth, it's startling.
Yeah.
To the states to determine if and when a woman can have an abortion?
No, I wouldn't leave it to the states.
You wouldn't, right.
No, I would.
He would say completely, it's up to the woman.
My belief is we should leave it to the woman. We shouldn't have government involved.
Even if it's full term?
Even if it's full term.
Mic drop.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. So he does not pro life. Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, that right there shows me, you know, what his true colors are. I mean, obviously, you know, we align around the his position on vaccines and the big pharma, but that one right there would be the one reason I couldn't vote for him is, you know, you don't value human life. You know?
Yeah. I mean, what does full term mean? It means even if you have a live infant in front of you. I mean, that's, you have to analyze what he just said, that it is, it's not a concept anymore.
Yeah.
Full term isn't a concept. Is this just tissue like the old days of the argument? You notice that's not the argument anymore.
Well, I remember when late term abortion was the big thing, like, oh, this is barbaric. Now they're going to full term. I mean, that's even more.
Yeah. And late term used to be the when a child would be considered viable, which would be 22 weeks.
Right.
Yeah.
And they used to say, you know, Democrats, their position used to be, okay, let's just make abortion like not often, right? Like not as many abortions, you know? And now it's like they've shifted completely to like all the way up to the moment the child's born. And that's just bizarre to me that people could worship Molech like that. I mean, just, and we know like 90% or 95, it's like really high percentage of most abortions are just for convenience. They, you know, it's not the life of the mother. It's not, you know, rape or incest. It's actually for convenience. And when I talk to people about this, they're like, oh, well, there's so many, what about the life of the mother? I'm like, okay, but that's like 5% or less than 5% of all abortions are for that reason, those reasons that you're saying. So you're going to open the door here to open it to 90% of the abortions, which are just flat out killing children because of convenience.
Well, and even stopping to say in those 5%, let's look at those more carefully. But in the 95%, let's say no.
Right.
And what you've done is you've actually humanized the decision process. So that you're looking at all sides and you're trying to bring understanding into it. So you're right. I mean, this issue that came out of his, when he said it, I mean, a shudder went down my spine when I heard it come out of his mouth, because I wasn't expecting that question.
Mm. Yeah, that is shocking. It is shocking.
It's grieving. Really, it is.
Yeah.
It grieves my soul to think about it.
Yeah.
I mean, that we need a president who's going to say this is evil and we're going to stop it. Mm-hmm. And President Trump, you know, he's the only president that ever went to the March for Life. Even Bush, the other ones didn't go. He's the only one that actually put teeth to what he said he was going to do, which he was going to provide justices that would vote conservatively on those issues, and specifically abortion. He was the president that helped overturn Roe v. Wade, right? So this federal control of abortion, making it, you know, I just think that, you know, I had this one position on abortion is like, okay, the at minimum, you should make it that every woman who is a, considering to have an abortion should do an ultrasound and see the baby and the heartbeat and the, and like to see it, because like Pregnancy Resource Center, which we give money to and so many others do, the different pregnancy resource centers, one of the number one ministries they have is showing the mother, the child, like in an ultrasound. And it's something like 19 or 16 out of 20, you know, abortion minded mothers will then all of a sudden not do it, not abort, do abort. They shift like that because they're actually seeing what they're doing. And there's like, I cannot do that. And I think there's something innate in a mother to say, I can't kill my child. Like they're trying to make it say, oh, it's just a clump of cells. When you see the heartbeat, you see the body, the figure, the fingers, the hands, the head, you go, wait, this is a living person. I'm killing it in my own, my living person inside of me. And when, you know, I think that alone would change the dynamics if everybody had to at least see
Good, Brandon. My mom is part of an outreach ministry.
Oh, wow.
Informed Choices. Yeah, she's been doing it for years. She counsels, and she's really active and super proud of her. She's always had that strong desire to help people in that area.
Your family is full of heroes.
Yeah, I guess it's in the blood or something, or the water we drink. But it's God's grace. It's God's grace. He's blessed us. And, you know, so, yeah, I have a heritage to live under. And then I see a legacy after me as well. And so God's been good.
Well, you know, our subject matter is the wheels of justice grind slowly but exceedingly fine, which is, Ron, you came up with that, and it's a very clever title. And there were just two trials I wanted to bring up before we finish off tonight, because you know how things move very quickly. One is the Alvin Bragg case, and that's where Michael Cohen was the big he was the big witness for the prosecution, he and Stormy Daniels. So these two are basically making Alvin Bragg's whole case, which is so interesting because one is an ex-porn star and she does not call herself a victim at all. She says that she's not a walkaway person. She was not victimized. That's, you know, she's a strongly a sexualized woman who enjoys that reputation. And so she was one of the key witnesses. The other was Michael Cohen, who was used to be Trump's lawyer. And he went to jail for perjury, for tax evasion. He lied to banks. He lied to Congress. He lied to his wife. They found out on the stand today. He said that the money that he paid Stormy Daniels, he got from refinancing his home because he didn't want his wife to know. So I don't know why his wife would be, it would be a problem if it were for Trump.
Yeah.
I see why it'd be a little problem if it were for Cohen. So possibly the cover-up wasn't a cover-up for Trump, but rather a cover-up for Cohen. So and now he's wanting to be a reality show. He's talking about he wants to star on a reality show, and he's really, you know, as an ex-barred, he's been debarred or defrocked, whatever that's called when you take your license for
debarred
away. He and Stormy, they basically Jesse Waters was saying they have two things in common. Both get paid by the hour and they'll do anything for money. And these are the two star witnesses. And, you know, the book of Proverbs says in the Bible that a matter seems right when a case is given until the other side gives its point of view. And today was the prosecution had Michael Cohen on the stand. Tomorrow, the defense gets him. So I have a feeling tomorrow will bring some interesting facts.
Yeah, you can only throw those lies out there until they actually get cross-examined. And now you're going to see how they don't all fit. And why would your wife care that you were refinancing your home and using that money to pay off a porn star for having an affair. Why would she care if it was Trump? She might care if it was you, but why would she care if it was Trump? Like, you know, it just doesn't make any sense.
Wouldn't if Trump needed to pay some hush money, wouldn't he have just coughed up the cash? You know what I'm saying? It's like,
write it back. I think he
had ever ask a lawyer, hey, can you take a loan out on your house so you can cover my costs, even though I have tons of money? I mean, it just, to me, it doesn't make sense at all.
Well, and he said over and over again, well, I felt that Trump would be angry if I didn't do this. Trump never told them to do it. He thought that it would be, that it would be wise to do it. He should do it. Trump implied and sent and told him that he should. And like, never did Trump direct him to do it. So his perception or his definition of his perception in that moment was, I'm doing this for Trump.
Yeah.
And then if there's actually a moment in the questioning where he talks about not getting a very good bonus. He says something about he didn't get the bonus he wanted and looked at Trump, and Trump looked up and laughed at him.
Yeah.
So it looks like he's doing this out of spite. Like, he's after Trump, like, you know, and he's trying to extort him, or he did try to extort him.
Yeah.
I just think there's so many times here that where people who come after Trump saying he did something, it's really they who did it. And they're actually trying to make him the scapegoat here. And I think it's going to totally backfire, which it is backfiring. I mean, yeah. Fannie Willis is backfired. Jack Smith tampering, now found out that Jack Smith admitted to the honor near judge that he actually tampered the evidence, and he destroyed evidence or didn't show evidence that would have been exculpatory, meaning would have proved Trump that was innocent. And then it comes out that the FBI actually tampered with the evidence. They actually brought in extra documentation and the covers that said confidential, you know, classified information. They set it all up and took a photo, which we all saw that they did that. Yeah. Like, it was clear that but now they admitted that they actually had tampered evidence. They'd brought in evidence in. They'd actually put it on the ground, took a photo, and set it all up.
Yeah.
So the wheels of justice are coming out, right? That's what I think the theme of tonight is, that the truth is going to come out. It may take some time, but the truth is coming out. And I think, you know, we're at the end of this cycle of 3.5 years where we're now things are going to speed up, and there's going to be more things coming out.
Yeah. And I think they were able, through those unredacted documents that just came out last week, they were able to make the connection between Biden's White House and the National Archives. And it looks like the White House instructed the National Archives to refer a criminal case to the DOJ. And that's when the FBI made the raid on Mar-a-Lago. So there was a hey, it's time to do this, and we think you should make that recommendation. So that was found in the unredacted documents, which, you know, it never goes well for you when you lie and there's the evidence is out there. So, you know, I know Jack Smith's whole document case has totally fallen apart. What they've said is the judge has said that she's not considering it till at least until further into July. So I'm not quite sure where it's going to go, but it really doesn't have any premise at all.
Yeah. And that's so, another example of the wheels going slow, but exceedingly fine, because, you know, this here was evidence. And now that they look at it and it took time, it's like, well, actually, that's not really the evidence. Some of these papers were put in there to make it look worse than it really is. And the way they had it sprawled out, I think they even had all of this at the station, and then they came back and put it there on the, you know, and took pictures. And so the timing, everything, but, you know, it takes time. And now the truth is coming out.
And then that picture leaked to the New York Times. So that's when we first saw it, is it was somehow it leaked out. Like, this high security agency doesn't know how to keep their mouth shut or how to keep their evidence in lock and key.
Yeah.
And now it's bit them in the rear.
Sounds like a big setup. Like J6, like a bunch of these things, the wheels of justice coming out, they're coming out with a variety of things this week. As you know, AstraZeneca withdraws its COVID-19 jabs globally after admitting that there were deaths from clogs in the arteries, right? Yeah. So this is interesting, you know. And then they said, "Oh, but we're not discontinuing it because of the deaths. We're discontinuing it because of lack of demand." And you're like, "Wait a second. Wouldn't people dying be what caused the lack of demand for the drug?" You know, and people getting, you know, blood clots, people dying of adverse reactions, people getting sick. I mean, we're seeing over and over and over again that died suddenly. I mean, I watched like 25 new people in the last hour on died suddenly on X tonight. I'm just going, all these people are dying. I had a childhood friend I was in drama with, and he was a couple of years younger than me. So he's about 45, and he just died this last week. And I'm like, okay, did he get the vaccine? You know, I'm wondering, he's, you know, younger, you know, guys don't usually die at 45. He seemed like he was in good health. So, you know, there's these, you know, they're no longer going to provide the jabs because they are lacking of demand.
Diabolic thing is that AstraZeneca was one of the primary, they donated a lot of their vaccines to African nations. So it's known to be one of the highest risk vaccines, one of the highest with adverse reactions. And they, I think they knowingly sent their stuff to third world nations to supposedly, obviously they were reimbursed financially. It wasn't like they did it out of the goodness of their heart, but the highest risk vaccine went to a lot of African nations.
Wow. That sounds like very Gates, you know, Bill Gates's genocidal Bill Gates. He got banned from India because he was experimenting with vaccines on women and causing women to, not be able to have babies.
Yeah.
And that's an example of taking advantage of the helpless. You know, when you have a nation that's not as powerful with its laws and those things, and you just dump your garbage over there, they're like, oh, what are they going to do? You know, are they really going to come back and, you know, do much? No. And so there's really no consequence for AstraZeneca to dump their garbage over into Africa. It's very sad.
Yeah, they can't even fight it. And even if they were in America, they wouldn't be able to fight it because they have been given immunity. These companies have been given immunity back in the 80s, like 1986 or so. And it's just interesting, you know, like I remember there's a story of Ronald Reagan talking to Dr. Fauci, and he said, well, we need to have immunity because we, you know, we're going to do these trials on these drugs. And if people could get hurt, he's like, well, why can't you just make them safer? Right. So what Ronald Reagan said. And of course, Fauci's been in the business for a long time making drugs that kill people.
Yeah, he has. You know, he is he contributes 80% of the donations that are given to the WHO are given by the Bill Gates Foundation, 80%. Wow. So he has a high investment in their success.
Yeah.
Yeah,
we'll have to save that conversation because we know that the pandemic treaties coming down the pike on May 27th. The UN's going to be voting on that, and so that's something we want to keep our eye on. And it definitely is something that we want to understand what is being agreed to, possibly on our behalf as far as sovereignty. But there's more to it in there because it has climate change, CO2 levels, not just what they can call pandemics. It also has a whole piece on the sexuality of children, of being able to push that agenda through the UN. So the whole transgender agenda is part of what is being offered up in the pandemic treaty. So there's a lot of non-pandemic, and of course the sovereignty of nations, there's no check and balance, and they want to be able to say that we can surveil you and that we can censor you and we can force fax you and we can force digital ID on you, very much like the the credit score that China has right now. So it's serious stuff. And it's this month. In 2 weeks, they're going to be voting on it.
Yeah, May 27th, I believe. And this is really their Hail Mary pass. I mean, if you think about it, this is the whole ball put together. If we can get this, we'll survive. If we don't get this, we're gone. Yeah. I mean, it's every extreme agenda that we've been talking about all packaged into one big shiny bow around it.
Well, my guess is they already know the count because it's going to be in the UN by the ambassadors of the UN, and they have been installed. So it's up to nations to, like Britain said, we're not going to agree to it.
Right.
And I know 20 attorney generals in our nation have said, we're not going to agree to it. I don't know what that means for us. Japan's considering, I mean, they're trying to, I think they still have the vote to do, but it's up to nations to say, no, we are not in the WHO. We have got to say that as our nation.
Yes.
And so far, we're not hearing that from our executive branch at all.
Yeah. Well, the executive branch, unfortunately, we're not hearing it from any of the congressmen as well. I mean, I think it was only like 49 of them that actually signed a letter urging, urging Biden not to adopt the World Health Organization treaty and saying it must go through the process of any other treaty. And it's citing the fact that it would be losing sovereignty. We would lose sovereignty. I mean, when you hand over the health procedures of your nation to somebody, you're handing over to them everything.
Yeah.
And then of course, like you said, the language of climate change and all these other agendas are all in it. We just had this big thing that happened in the sky recently, right? The old Aurora Borealis from the Northern Lights came down everywhere else, and who knows if that was actually, I think it's probably completely natural, but we know that DARPA and some of these other organizations have been magnetic, sending lasers into the ionosphere and what it actually accomplishes. So they seriously could put together a fake narrative and we would just go right along going, oh, well, this is a national emergency. This is a global emergency. There's a pandemic involved in here.
Climate change.
Yeah.
Yeah, it can be climate change.
They actually have language in there. The language is in the World Health Organization's treaty about climate change being part of a national, a global health emergency.
Yeah, and that can force farmers. It can force us all to be CO2 to have a monitoring device. So it would. There's just so many reasons. The agenda just seems so obvious that why would anybody who wasn't a globalist go along with it? And therein lies the rub.
Right. Well, here's some good news. It came out now recently that Birx, remember Scarf Lady, Dr. Deborah Birx, who was part of the task force there and with Fauci going to the mic and telling us what we need to do and not to do about COVID-19. Well, she came out this week and admitted that the jabs kill people. Oh, they do? I thought they were safe and effective, which you told us over and over and over again. She says, well, I think Jim Jordan asked her specifically, so were you guys guessing that they were safe and effective or were you lying? Well, I don't know. Well, what do you mean you don't know? Like, well, I think we were hoping. You were hoping that they were going to be effective. So therefore, you could tell everybody they are safe and effective.
Wow.
So she was in front of some subcommittee then giving that.
Yes.
Oh, my gosh.
And then she was also on a talk show talking about the same thing, which was interesting because so was Chris Cuomo. And he was on a talk show saying that he now is taking ivermectin and that there's all these people that are having side effects because of the jabs. And he's sick to himself for all the lies that were pushed. Right. Demonizing ivermectin, telling everybody they better get the jab, and now he says that he's going to report on this is like the main thing he's going to be reporting on for now on.
A little late.
He had a choice. He's all, but people had a choice. They didn't have to take it. We had no, what could we do? We couldn't force them. And he's like, really? No, you were forcing people.
Yeah, they can lose their income and not be able to go to school or go to work or anything like that.
Yep.
Yeah.
Shame them into compliance and then demand that they don't take it, then they're going to lose their insurance and that they're, you know, Kaiser's going to demand that you, you know, I mean, the executive branch of the government, the president was working with Kaiser to force the Kaiser to make everybody get vaccinated. I mean, it's just like, wait, don't try to gaslight us. We just all lived through this. We know exactly what you all told us from the podium 10 different times that Fauci said masks work, masks don't work. You get a shot, get three shots and a booster. We all
double mask.
Double mask, triple mask, you know, ivermectin's dog paste. You know, Joe Rogan's a threat to democracy. The world's going to burn down if you listen to him. Like, take your what was it, the medication that kills people, that Dr. Fauci created the NIH procedural drug.
Yeah.
It was like, and most people died from being on a ventilator and taking that drug, the prescribed drug.
I wonder if Snopes is going to have to rewrite half their stuff on that, you know, similar to this one. This just recently came out where left-wing fact checker Snopes reverses course and fact checks themselves, forced to admit that Ashley Biden's diary is real.
Oh my goodness.
And for those who don't know.
Now, I don't know if that means that I trust him more or I trust him less.
Yeah, I don't trust them anyway. Just I think there's an agenda. But, you know, what was really interesting about it, it was that she, you know, she talks about herself. She was hypersexualized at a young age and she said she was molested. And then at the end, she's like, you know, showers with my dad, probably not appropriate, you know, and so it's all right there. And, you know, the person that actually found the book, she found it in a mattress. In a halfway house, I think it was,
or an Airbnb or something. Yeah.
Yeah. And anyway, she gets convicted for you know, sharing this information because it was private information. And so, but you know, why would you get convicted if it wasn't true? And so that started the whole thing. Well, now they admit, hey, there's something to that story. So it was Amy Harris. She found the diary at a halfway house in Palm Beach in 2020 and sold it to Project Veritas for $40,000. So anyway, interesting. The truth seems to always come out.
Wow. So. It's a good thing nothing happened this week.
Oh, my gosh. Well, yeah. I got to say, something great is happening this coming weekend. Some of you guys are familiar with the campaign called Baptize California. That is coming this week. Is the largest coordinated baptism in California history. It's going on all of these locations, including Santa Cruz, actually down in Capitola. Basically the largest coordinated baptisms ever happened in our in the state of California, and our city is involved in it. It's going to be really great. It's going to be happening at Capitola at the main. Was it the bandstand right there? Mm-hmm. There's a bunch of churches that are involved in it. And so you can come out and get baptized. If you're not baptized yet, you know, this is the answer. You know, we talk about a lot of problems on here.
Wow.
This right here is the answer to people having a legitimate encounter with the Lord Jesus Christ, confessing their sins, repenting, believing the good news, getting baptized in the Holy Spirit, baptized in water, and walking and following him. No matter what problems we talk about here, Jesus is the answer to all of these problems. And that's, it's just neat to see that we're going to have a Victory Outreach, Firestarters Church, Hilltop, Gathering by the Bay, Tree of Life, Trade Winds Church, and the True Love Christian Festival and more are all going to be out there. So if you want to get baptized, maybe you haven't been baptized, you listen to this podcast, you're like, yeah, I'm in the Santa Cruz area, I live here, and you haven't been baptized, we encourage you to get out there and get baptized. And if you want to get baptized, a friend of mine named Marilyn is helping people. You can either have your own pastor baptize you if you haven't been baptized yet, or you can have one of the many churches that are going to be there to baptize you. But you want to email mmlandmml@gmail.com. That's kind of a hard one to say. So I'm going to throw it up here on the screen. This is to get baptized. I'll put it up here for us. and present share screen here. So yeah, if you want to get baptized, email Marilyn here, mmlanmml@gmail.com, and you can get baptized this weekend at Baptized California. Pretty cool.
Yeah, that is going to shift some things. I can't help but think how happy the Lord is, because it's not a, this is my church or this is my denomination. This is the body of Christ coming together saying, we are testifying that we believe in Jesus. We've made a decision for him. He is our God and we are followers of his. And we're going to show it to the public by doing what he commanded us to do. And he did. Jesus said, go into all the nations and baptize them. And so, like you said, it's both baptized in water and baptized by a spirit. And so this is so exciting.
Yeah, good way to end. This is a good news, you know, and this is where it counts.
Hey, I just want to say thank you for joining us.
Having our special guest, Annalise Powers, as well on the election integrity. And we look forward to seeing you next week. But in the meantime, share with your friends, like, share this out. We definitely want more people to know about this, especially if you found value in it. So have a good night, and we will see you next week with Bear Radio.
Bear.